and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to try and talk you off the ledge from what was a very, very interesting game last night as Minnesota escapes, and I think escape is probably the right word as we talk about it, over South Dakota State 28-21. There were an incredibly large amount of facets of this game that weren't great for Minnesota, and if we're going to be quite honest here, Luke, not entirely sure how they won that game last night, but you know what? They escaped with a win, and there's a lot to get into.
I tried to get my 5-year-old niece, or actually she's about to turn 6, to come downstairs with me and record, you know, in her very childish voice, a win is a win, but I couldn't convince her to do it. I think she's still mad that the Gophers didn't, you know, cover the spread. She had bet big money that they were going to. She bet the over big, so I think she's pretty disappointed. I can't get her to record it even.
If you thought if you thought Minnesota had a bad beat last night, do you know what the first half over underline was?
It was
six and a half.
Yeah.
And Minnesota scores the touchdown, makes the extra point to go up 7.
Yeah.
And then it's a personal foul.
Yes.
And then Michael Lance misses. Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine?
Incredible.
That's just. Oh, that's why you don't put money on games. Oh, my gosh. That would just kill me. That's such a bad beat.
Right. All right. So we got to make sure that we give a shout out to our sponsor, the Goal Line Club, who is sponsoring this entire 2019 season. Ryan and I were at the first tailgate, the GLC tailgate. The food was legit. The company was legit. I think Ryan would say the drinks were legit. It was a great atmosphere. If you're planning to go to the Georgia Southern game, you need a place to tailgate. The promo code for $5 off for non-members is CHILLIN5, CHILLIN, and the number 5. All right, Ryan, let's get into this game. The Gophers pull away and they win. And there's probably a lot
to
learn.
Pull away is probably a strong term.
Pull it out is definitely the more accurate term.
Game was certainly strong, yes.
Yeah, I know a lot of people frustrated. They get outscored in the second half 14-8, but they pull out the 28-21 victory. That's all that really matters at the end of the day. I mean, we can go into this a lot. You were reminding me, Northwestern lost last year to a bad Akron team at home, ended up winning the West. I'm not trying to justify and say that that's the Gophers' case, but I think this Jackrabbits team, let's give them some credit. I think they're probably better than that bad Akron team that Northwestern lost to.
Yeah, I have this conversation all the time with people in the Missouri Valley that if North Dakota State was in the MAC, they would probably contend for the MAC, and especially if you're a bad MAC team, you're going to lose to the top FCS teams.
Yeah.
And South Dakota State is the number 4 team in the FCS. And I think they would probably kick the snot out of that Akron team that beat Northwestern at home. Now, again, I'm not entirely saying that Minnesota still is going to win the Big Ten West. There's a lot that has to improve and get better and everything from there. But I just want to remind folks that it's still plausible. Now, that team last night that you saw has to get a lot better in a lot of different facets. We'll get into that, but the season is not lost. They still won the game. They didn't really have a ton of business winning that, especially after just an absolutely putrid third quarter where the offense couldn't do anything and the defense, outside of one pick six that was gifted to them, couldn't really get out of their own way. But this was a South Dakota State team that I thought schemed very well in terms of Minnesota really didn't know what to look for and how to, you know, they were talking about all week, Joe Rossi and PJ Fleck, you know, scouting ghosts, because the South Dakota State offense was one that, number one, had a brand new quarterback, of which I thought Javorie Gibbs is absolutely going to be the worst quarterback that Minnesota sees all year, but their offensive coordinator was brand new, and so you don't really have any tape on him. I mean, the first play of the game, I'm only, you know, a quarter in here to rewatching it because Fox Sports' new replay app is just absolutely disastrous with commercials. But it's just they went to that reverse to start the game. Well,
correct.
Yeah, they went to the reverse, but they also had two pulling linemen come back, and that's how they took care of the play side linebacker and the play side safety. And so it's like, it's not necessarily a, you know, it was a reverse, but they also schemed it to where you had two pulling guys getting out in front of your blocker. The blocker, Kay Johnson, you guys saw last night, was a pretty dang good player. And again, it's okay that the FCS has pretty dang good players, as even from South Dakota State in recent years. I'm sure you've heard of a guy named Dallas Goedert, who's now with the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, you have to give South Dakota State some credit. I thought that, what they did, especially in motion and misdirection for the against the Minnesota defense that was very green at the linebacker spot, and we can get into that, was something to where, you know, they took advantage of that. And so, I mean, maybe that's where we start, is on defense, Luke.
Yeah, I think so. I do want to correct. I said that the Gophers got outscored in the second half. They actually did outscore South Dakota State 15-14, so I'll correct that. I forgot about the pick six that resulted in the touchdown. That was a great play. I mean, you got to take advantage of opportunities, and the Gophers did, whether it was the pressure or not. So, but yes, okay, defensively, let's talk defense. You know, they seemed to kind of start strong. It looked like the Gophers were playing pretty well. They gave up a couple chunk plays early, but they kind of bend but didn't break. You know, no points in the first quarter, only giving up seven in the second, right? And they were reasonably good on third down, getting off the field. You know, South Dakota State was three of nine. They were 1 for 2 on fourth down efficiency. But, you know, again, what was our biggest concern last year? Could they stop the run? And this was a game where they really, really struggled to stop the run on, well, let's see, 34 rushing attempts. South Dakota State averaged 5.1 yards for 174 total rushing yards. That, to me, that just was not good.
I think that's putting it kindly is, I mean, we can start with the front seven, and that's where anytime you go 57 minutes into a game, and you don't have a tackle for loss or a sack.
Yeah.
Especially against an FCS team. Now, again, I think South Dakota State is better than many MAC teams that Minnesota will play. I'd argue that they're probably going to be better than Georgia Southern. But that's very concerning. And it's concerning that Carter Coughlin was banged up for most of the, I think it was the second quarter on, was the first time I saw him go into the injury tent. You saw him come out for those final few passing down plays to end the game where Minnesota finally was able to generate some pressure, but Carter Coughlin really was non-existent. There was a play in the first quarter where it was a third down, and South Dakota State literally played right into Minnesota's defense hand where they went right at Carter Coughlin. And what they did was Carter immediately jumped upfield. They played that happening. Well, the issue was Boye Mafe, who was inside as a three technique, shot through the A-gap. He forced the running back to string it out, and then Minnesota was able to get a tackle right at the line of scrimmage. So I'm a little bit concerned, yeah. And I think you definitely have to be, is where was the pressures outside of that final drive? And that's where Minnesota's going to have to get better. And, you know, I was sitting up there in the press box talking with some people, and, you know, obviously we're talking about where were the tackle for losses, where were the pressures. But, again, I think you have to give some credit to South Dakota State.
For sure.
They mean, you saw some of the looks they were throwing out there last night. I mean, they literally had 10 guys in the box, or in terms of they'd have like two tight end sets with their wide receivers stacked right behind them. And it's tough to get a traditional, you know, pressure package in there when they're going with so many guys at the line of scrimmage and you don't know how they're going to do it. Or they have their two back sets, and then they have Kay Johnson go behind him for a traditional kind of triple option type of look. But, I mean, this is a defensive line that's going to have to play a lot better. And I talked about on Gopher Illustrated how Jim Panagos, I gave him my fall camp, you know, defensive MVP, because it looked like this defense had taken a step, or this defensive line had taken a step forward. Now, they didn't show up until the final 2 minutes of the game, and then they made their impact and were to seal Minnesota's victory. But it's a place where they're going to have to get a lot better. And that's where I continue to come back to how much of it was South Dakota State and how much of it was the defensive line didn't know what to expect from where they had to be in terms of going against an offense that they didn't have a lot of tape on. And so how much was it they were playing hesitant because they didn't know, well, am I going to have to stay in my gap or can I really get after the pressure? And that's where I'm very intrigued, and you're going to hear that a lot from me today, that how does this team look 8 days from now against Fresno State, because Minnesota is going to have an adequate game tape on them. Fresno State is in the exact same situation that South Dakota State was, where they're going to be breaking in a brand new quarterback with a brand new offensive coordinator. The only difference is Fresno State tomorrow night takes on USC in the Rose Bowl.
Right.
So you're going to get a very good scout on what Fresno State is going to be able to do, because I would say sources would tell me, and sources would tell anybody, that they're going to throw out the entire playbook trying to get a very meaningful win for them in the Rose Bowl. So Minnesota is going to have an adequate game tape on what to prepare for, and how much is that going to change for what Minnesota is going to do. Because you saw that Minnesota struggled and defending the run, whether it was overall 5.1 yards per carry. I believe running backs alone were over 5 yards a carry. Yes, I'm concerned about that. I'm also a little bit – I haven't gotten back to where Sam Renner had two defensive holding calls.
Yeah, and that, those were legit. Those were – like, I'll make a comment. I thought the game was very, very well officiated. I thought it was very even both sides. I know, I mean, some,
we can talk about the holding on the South Dakota State kickoff return touchdown that I'm not sure was a hold, or the block in the back.
The block in the back was – that's
Daniel well-schemed swing pass there. I don't know about those two, but it's just not every day you see a defensive lineman get two holding calls in the same game. And I mean, obviously it was something that the officials were looking for. I don't know when the last time was a Gopher defensive lineman had two holding calls against him.
Yeah, I definitely thought that both calls were legit. And I agree, that is very, very unique. Another thing I wanted to touch on, you know, defensive line wise, before we kind of wrap that up, you had talked about, you know, the improvement maybe in the middle. I'm not sure that I saw that, but Micah Dutredway did flash in a big moment and got that big TFL that was very, very meaningful towards that very last drive for South Dakota State.
I mean, how badly did they need that?
Super.
Where, I mean, he's the Notre Dame graduate transfer, comes big when Minnesota needs him most, and he beats, I think it was the right guard right across his face, and he's able to hold on for the tackle for loss. And then I believe it was two plays after that on that 4th and 10 where Asezi Otemiwu and Teyon Devers just flat out beat their guys, and they were able to get the sack on the freshman quarterback. And so I'm not going, you know, and that's where Ryan James put on Twitter after the game, and I'm with him, that, you know, it's just one game. Yeah. Now, folks, I know that you're frustrated. I know that it wasn't great. Minnesota was largely outplayed for many portions of this game. You don't have to tell me. I'm well aware. Like I said, especially the third quarter, that was putrid, and they had no business. They have no business, frankly, being as close as that game was. And it's just one game, though, and that's where – I mean, we saw, I think last year, 2018 was a prime example of, you get absolutely drummed by an Illinois team, and then you come back the next week and absolutely take out behind the woodshed a Purdue team that was white hot at the time.
Right.
And that's what happens when you're dealing with these young kids from week to week. And so that's where, I mean, was I thrilled at the way that the defense played, especially on the defensive line? No. But now they're going to have an adequate game tape, and we're going to find out how well Jim Panagos, a guy that's been coaching defensive lines for over 20 years, can prepare his defensive line when they know what they're likely going to see up front for a majority of the time. But we should probably get the linebacker, and that was just a disaster at many times last night.
Yeah, linebacker was a disaster. And, you know, I know I messaged you during the game. We messaged back and forth quite a bit. I am still not sold on Rossi. But in the same respect, it's time to, like, don't judge him on one game alone, right? We got to pump the brakes a little bit here. The same with Panagos and et cetera. This is still one game. It's still a small sample size. This is the hardest game to prepare for. But in the same respect, I wouldn't be totally over the moon.
I mean, I wouldn't be elated.
No, exactly. I wouldn't be over the moon, you know, like you were after the Wisconsin game in that 4-game stretch. I think we still have to be, you know, somewhat critical, but understand that, you know, there's still improvement to be made here. There's a lot to learn. And the linebackers in particular have a lot to improve on. They can very much change their best. You know, it's easy to point out, like, a Mariano Sori-Marin struggled massively. I wasn't I expected more from Thomas Rush. He didn't flash a ton, just only two total tackles. Even specifically, the Barber, Thomas Barber, you know, maybe not the traditional high tackle number that we would expect. And oftentimes he looked like he was just frantically trying to get guys into right positions, right? So just from the linebacker's perspective, it was really a struggle.
Yeah, let's get into it. Where news came out before the game, I talked about it on Gopher Lit, yeah. Put it on Twitter that Kamal Martin was not going to suit up for the game. And we asked PJ Fleck afterwards because all we knew was it was coach's decision. He's not injured. And Fleck talked about how this was an extension from last year. As you'll remember that Kamal Martin missed the bowl game. I would imagine it has something to do with whatever happened after the axe. Something happened and he missed the bowl game, and now he missed South Dakota State.
Which kudos to Fleck. I mean, he's staying true to, team rules are team rules, and he's gonna hold you to that. And I respect the decision that he makes. I mean, life is about a lot more than just football. And if he's teaching a lesson through a suspension, great.
And so Kamal's going to be back next week, and that's obviously huge because you saw that Minnesota's young linebackers were just dismantled by two things. Number one's motion.
Yes.
And number two, misdirection. The two M's that Minnesota's linebackers had a lot of issues with last year. Now, this is where I have to remind you that the guys that Minnesota were playing last night is something to where Mariano Soria-Marin hasn't played more than 5 defensive snaps in his life before last night. Thomas Rush is probably at 15. And Braylon Oliver literally hasn't played any.
Yeah,
and South Dakota State took advantage of that. And again, credit to their offensive coordinator for putting them in one-on-one situations against Minnesota's young linebackers. Who it was a struggle at times. It certainly was. Where whether it was motion across that Minnesota's linebackers would get lost in the wash, or whether it was Mariano Soria-Marin biting on play action, the tight end leaks out behind him. He recognizes that, but he's a step late, and it's a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Or on a long swing pass to, I believe it was Mikey Daniel,
mm-hmm.
or Pierce Strong, one of the running backs, where they went with like 2-3, I think it was a 2 running back set. They swung him out to the right side on play action, and I think it was Braylon Oliver this time, number 14, where he bites on the play action, and then Strong just gets vertical behind him, catches it, and that touchdown is called back because of a flag. They end up scoring on that drive anyway, but I mean, it just looked like you had a bunch of young linebackers trying to figure it out, and it wasn't great. Mm-hmm. Now, that was essentially their first game, and yes, I know it's incredibly frustrating that number 55, Mariano Soria-Marin, wasn't that good. I think that's putting it kindly. Thomas Rush, it was interesting to me the way that Minnesota kind of used him, where if Minnesota went into like a 4-3 traditional, Thomas Rush would be on the outside, Soria-Marin would be inside with Thomas Barber. And I think that what South Dakota State did is, as I'm assuming this is what I'm going to find as I continue to dig into this game for my GIF-free rewinds on Gopher Illustrated. For those of you looking for that over the weekend, they'll probably be up on Saturday or so. But I think that they schemed to kind of take Thomas Barber out of that, especially once they saw that they were going to have young linebackers, mm-hmm. as in Oliver or Soria-Marin out there, going to do. If you're a smart offensive coordinator, you're going to pick on them. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what South Dakota State did. Now, this is where I come back to again. We talk about Joe Rossi talking about how he didn't know exactly how to prepare for a new offensive coordinator, a new quarterback. What are the wrinkles they're going to throw in? It's clear that, if you're a Missouri Valley fan listening to this, or you've watched any NDSU football, I know that I was sitting up there watching a lot of NDSU concepts with the 2-3 tight end looks and how they were using misdirection and motion to kind of get them open. And credit to Jason Eck, they're using some of the things that his neighbors to the north have been very successful at here in recent years. And so now that Joe Rossi, this is his position group, along with him being the defensive coordinator, now that he's going to have a game tape of Fresno State once again, how much does this unit improve? Obviously, getting Kamal Martin back in there, a guy who's played football, a lot of football, in his 3 years so far at Minnesota, getting him back is going to be big. But you also see that Minnesota's got to get these linebackers, and they got to get them snaps, because Thomas Barber and Cabal Martin aren't going to be here next year. And you can't have completely green linebackers out there going into 2020. These guys are going to have to play some snaps to have an idea of what Big Ten football is like. And so, yeah, they took their lumps last night. I'm making no bones about that. But I'm also saying that things can change very quickly when you're dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old individuals. And if they feel confident in what they're going to see next week to an extent, I think you're going to see them play much more fast, and I think you're going to see them play better. Now, I would imagine this is the low point for this, for some of these young guys out there, as it maybe should be expected to be in game one, where they don't exactly know what they're going to see on a given week. But I just think they only can get better from here. And if they don't, then we can talk about that next week and how that's probably, I shouldn't say inexcusable, but it's extremely concerning if this linebacker position doesn't really get a whole lot better when they have to go on the road at a 9:30 p.m. kick to Fresno State. But I just think that they're going to be more prepared. And if you can prepare your young guys so that they feel more confident, they're going to play faster in return. But I do believe that, as I said, to begin this kind of tangent I'm on here, that South Dakota State deserves a lot of credit for what they did with misdirection, with different things there in motion against young linebackers who I'm not sure were adequately prepared for that. And that's where it comes back down to. I'm sure there's people telling me through their car or through their headphones right now, well, that's on Joe Rossi. And I'd say it's probably fair. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see how Joe Rossi, as PJ Fleck loves to say, it changes his best going to into a Fresno State team. But I just need to remind folks, it's just week one against a team that I thought was very, very well prepared for what PJ Fleck called afterwards their Super Bowl, because every FCS team coming into a bigger school's, you know, stadium is going to be well prepared, because this is how that gets them on the map.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people refuse to really schedule NDSU anymore. NDSU 3 years ago went into Iowa and beat Iowa. And that just doesn't look good for any Big Ten team. So South Dakota State was prepared. They attacked Minnesota's young linebackers. And now we have to see next week how Sorry Marin and Braylon Oliver and Thomas Rush respond, because they're still going to play.
Right.
You saw that when Minnesota went to those passing down packages, when they finally got to third and longs, you had, you know, Asezi Otemiwu being the only guy with his hand on the ground. I mean, you'd have Boye Mafe out there, Carter Coughlin, Teyon Devers, Thomas Rush, Braylon Oliver. There's a lot of different packages that Minnesota has, but they have to get significantly better before next week if they're going to beat that Fresno team on the road.
All right, I'm curious to get your thoughts on how the secondary played. I know this is a position, you know, outside that they were pretty confident, or I should say we were pretty confident that, you know, they had made some strides and had some depth. The question was really safety. And I'm going to start with just Jordan Howden. This is a guy that led the team in tackles, 9 solo tackles, 12 total, 2 pass breakups. What did you think of Jordan Howden's performance?
I was sitting up there with Dan Owen, one of our esteemed colleagues at Gopher Illustrated, and he kept, you know, I was looking for positives after the game. Never a good thing when I'm asking other people for positives. But, you know, he was like, Jordan Howden didn't play bad.
No.
And I was like, that'd be an accurate statement, because I thought Howden, well, what did you think before I
got here? Well, here, I was going to throw this hot take at you. Who was better, Howden or Winfield?
That's actually an elite take, because I didn't think Antoine Winfield played that well.
I didn't think he played that well. I would argue.
I would argue that they were both average.
Yeah, I'm not saying
that. You saw them have some highs, and you saw them have some lows.
Yep, I'm not saying that they were elite by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I thought, you know, Winfield definitely maybe struggled more. I think maybe consistency, Howden was a little better. I thought a play that really turned the third quarter was Winfield blitzed up the middle, came free, missed the sack. He
jumped.
Right. I could not understand why he hopped like that. And then, to the quarterback's credit, the quarterback made a great play, scrambled, got a first down, right? That was, to me, a big turning point in that whole third quarter.
It's funny you mentioned that. You're just becoming an elite football mind now.
Thank you.
Because PJ Fleck referenced that play specifically in his post-game press conference, of which, if you want to see what PJ Fleck had to say at his postgame presser. That free video with quotes is up on Gopher Illustrated already. That he referenced that play, and he's like, Antoine Winfield gets a free run at the quarterback, and I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm summarizing for Fleck here, and he's like, he jumped. Antoine Winfield never jumps there, but he jumped, and instead of an 8-10 yard sack, it results in the quarterback scrambling for a first down. I mean, he's like, that's a play that Antoine Winfield has to make. And then he came back and surmised that folks have to be a little patient with him. And I agree with him to an extent that Antoine Winfield also hasn't played a football game since 11 months ago now, when he went down in game 4 against Maryland. Mm-hmm. So as good as Antoine Winfield is, you've seen how good he can be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take a little bit of time for him to remember how to play football because, I mean, why did he jump there? I mean, that quarterback was, I would say, very, I don't know if inept is too harsh. He was brutal, man.
He was passing the ball.
He made a couple throws that were like, okay, that's fine. And then he made a couple throws that were like, what are you doing?
He had flashes where he was okay, but he had a couple where he, especially with pressure, he really struggled.
So Jordan Howden and Antoine Winfield. I mean, I thought that Howden was fine. And if I can say that about Jordan Howden in 13 games in terms of he's either fine or better, Minnesota's defense is going to be good.
Let's summarize it like this. I think I can summarize up Jordan Howden's improvement in basically one thing. How many times last year in space did that guy make a tackle?
This is, again, you and I are on the same page, and I'm sure people hate to listen to two people on the same page, but that's where it stood out to me last night that Jordan Howden has – or at least last night, took a step forward where there were three or four open field tackles that Jordan Howden made last night that he didn't make last year.
Mm-hmm.
And if he missed them, like he did at times last year, that's a house call.
Exactly.
And that's a turning point where I remember a couple specifically where it was him versus the running quarterback in space.
Mm-hmm.
Howden makes the tackle and it's third and four instead of first and goal.
Yeah.
And they
took a first down, but it wasn't a chunk play, right? Like it was only 6 yards instead of 26 yards, right? And I'm not trying to say that Jordan Howden is, you know, looking for the NFL draft in the next year. I just thought he played a better game and
he was more consistent last night than he was last year.
Right.
And I know that was one of my big concerns coming into this first game was Jordan Howden hadn't really done much in camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I still thought that some of the angles that Jordan Howden took to the ball were a little bit suspect at times, and I think that's being kind with it. You know, he did have two pass breakups in coverage as well. For a true sophomore learning the safety position still, it was a step forward, mm-hmm. I think, for him. Now we have to see how that looks next week. But, you know, with Antoine Winfield, too, I just thought that, and Fleck referenced it, too, after the game, I just thought he was trying to do too much.
Yeah,
where he was trying to overcompensate for maybe him knowing that Jordan Howden was a question mark coming in and he'd try to do his job. Well, you can't try to do someone else's job. You first have to do your own job, and you have to do that job really well. And that's where I'm sure Antoine Winfield would look back at last night and think about 3-4 plays that he should have had, and that could have been big momentum builders for Minnesota. I thought both were fine. And I thought on the outside, I thought the corners played well.
I did too.
I didn't see any Benjamin St. Juiced out there, which was a little surprising to me.
Yep.
I didn't see any Philip Howard out there. And so the three corners that rotated were Terrell Smith, Keandre Thomas, and Coney Durr. And I think rotated would even be an over exaggeration because I think Terrell Smith was only out there for a few series. He did miss an open field tackle. I remember watching that. But Keandre and Coney played a lot of football last night. And I believe Coney had a couple of pass breakups. Keandre had 8 tackles. I thought for the most part those guys played really well in coverage, and I thought for the most part those two made the tackles that they needed to. Now, I will say, Luke, before we switch on over to the offensive side of the ball, that I wasn't a huge fan of the 8-yard cushion that they were giving South Dakota State there where – the quarterback can complete a 5-yard hitch. I mean, that's something he just can do. And so I wasn't a huge fan of the 8-yard cushions they were giving. Essentially, it was a free 5-6 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see that change for next week against Fresno State.
Correct.
But I really don't have a lot of qualms from what I saw in the secondary. There were much more question marks and much more inconsistent play in the front seven.
Mm-hmm.
And so that those are both two units that are going to have to be much improved if Minnesota is going to be walking out of Fresno State next week with a win.
Yeah, and let's just wrap up. I mean, I thought that the secondary played well, but let's give Cade Johnson some credit. That guy could play some football.
Guys, it's almost like FCS football players that put up a lot of stats, like Cade Johnson did last year with 1,350 yards and 17 touchdowns, are good players. Because he made some big boy catches across the middle there.
Yep.
Where it was either third and long or it got him into the red zone where he was getting hit immediately when he caught that ball.
Yep.
Or it was a really tough contested catch, and Kay Johnson made the play. Like, this dude's a player. I mean, he played at Minnesota.
Yep.
I mean, that's for sure. And yes, you have to give Kay Johnson some credit there as well. But
I was impressed at how they use their running backs too, right? Like Pierce.
They were very creative with it. Yeah.
I mean,
and that's where the scheming comes back into play, where Minnesota didn't know what to prepare for with a new OC. Because
mm-hmm.
I can assure you, and I was sitting up there with Ross Uglum, who's our NDSU publisher for 24/7 Sports, and he's like, these are all looks that South Dakota State didn't show last year.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, I can see why Minnesota would be struggling, because this isn't anything they showed. Now, I wish I would have seen more adjustments from Minnesota, and maybe that – I mean, for all we know, Joe Rossi did make the adjustments, but the players just didn't make the plays.
Sure.
And that's what it ultimately could come down to. But I also think that, you know, Jabari Gibbs, for whatever you thought of him, I thought passing the ball, it was an absolute struggle.
I mean, 13 for 26, 193 yards, not great. One horrible interception. And then I'd probably put that read option fumble on him as well.
Yes. But, I talked about it in my five takeaways that Jabari Gibbs gave Minnesota the game.
Yeah.
Where he takes the grounder back, the center grounds it back to him. Minnesota gets pressure with a stunt from Mariano Soary-Marin, then Antoine Winfield got home, and he just threw it to the chest of Williamson in that third quarter for a pick six and gifted Minnesota 7 points. And then, you know, maybe we should talk about – I just want two quick things before we switch to offense, where number one, I thought SDSU's offensive coaching staff did a very good job, except for two things, or one thing in that third and fourth quarter. They take the lead 21-20,
mm-hmm.
and then they go pass heavy for the next two drives.
Yeah.
I'm sitting up there thinking to myself, you are running at the – we talked about it. They had 5 yards of carry last night.
Yep.
And they decide to go pass heavy, and then it ends in two, three, and I think it was a three and out, and then they get two first downs with the running game. And then they go read option, and Gibbs and the ball carrier mishandle the snap. Deladi Boudaire pounces on it shortly after that. Minnesota scores it. I didn't understand one bit why they went from ending the third quarter and just start going passive. It didn't make a lot of sense to me. And then I mentioned that botched exchange between the quarterback and the running back, and that gave Minnesota the game. And so you're not going to find likely a worse quarterback or a more green quarterback than what Minnesota saw last night, even though Fresno is going to be breaking in a brand new quarterback tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I just think that you can't expect worse quarterback play than that. So Minnesota is going to have to get better there. And they ultimately won the turnover battle because of it. And then they won the game because of it. That's 14 points off turnovers, or 15 points in Minnesota's instance. And that was an absolute gift.
Yeah. One question. I know we've focused a ton on defense so far. Setting the edge, what was up with that? Do you have any clue, or do we still need to dissect this more?
I still kind of want to watch the tape
to see
what the responsibilities were in certain instances. But from the way I remember Minnesota playing on those big runs last night, I think it was a matter of the linebacker getting caught out of position, getting too far outside.
Yeah.
The five technique defensive end getting caught too far inside, and then they were able to kind of just exploit Minnesota from there as they'd get to the second level, get hands on, and go from there. But that is absolutely one of the things I'll be focusing on in my gift rewind, so I can, number one, have a more accurate answer for you, and then for our subscribers on GI, again, it's only literally a dollar to join. Do you want to get a more accurate representation of what went wrong last night and what went right as well? They'll have the GIF rewinds up here soon, and I can show you with the video what's happening and why it's happening.
All right, you got one last point, or should we move on?
That's enough defense for me. I mean, I got my qualms with the offensive side of the ball as well.
We do. Let's real quick, another word for our sponsor, the Goal Line Club. Again, the Goal Line Club is a booster club that supports Gopher football. They only support Gopher football. If you want to support them, there are two ways that you can. You can become a member, sign up on their website. It's very cheap to join. I think it's about $100. I'm a member. If you also want to support them, but you don't want to be a member, join one of their events, whether it's the tunnel team or the tailgate. Again, you can get a promo code through us, CHILLIN5, for the Georgia Southern game. That's CHILLIN and the number 5, CHILLIN5. Just real quick, Ryan, you and I were at the tailgate. Kudos again to our guy Tony. Great food. I was real impressed. They had brats, chili. I made a chili dog with my brat. Absolutely delicious food.
And that's where, I've had Tony's breakfast for years. And, for those of you who haven't been on campus at Minnesota and not had Tony's, when I text my sources and ask them, hey, you want to go grab lunch? I mean, those guys in the football staff building, they always bring me to one place and one place only, and that's Tony's. And so, if those guys know where the good food is, of which I think they do, it's at Tony's. So if you want some pretty strong drinks, you want a good atmosphere, and you want some Tony's, I'd recommend using that CHILLIN5 code for you non-members at the next tailgate.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of offense. There are definitely moments that were good. There were moments that were not bad. Tanner Morgan, 13 of 18, 76 yards, 9.8 average, one touchdown, one interception. We'll get into the interception later. I mean, offense, passing the ball, Rashad Bateman had an elite first half, five receptions for 132 yards, 26.4 average, and a touchdown along a 44. He looked very much the complement to Tyler Johnson that Tyler Johnson is going to need this season.
Yeah, it's almost like if I'm going to pat myself on the back for something, it's picked Rashad Bateman as my fall camp MVP piece.
Right.
And I know there were a lot of people like, well, why would you do that? He was good last year. Well, yeah, he was good last year, but he's going to be great this year. And that's where you saw last night that, some people were like, well, Tyler Johnson, what happened to him? I thought he was supposed to be good. He's a bum. He's a bust. He stinks. All right, Mr. Keyboard Warrior.
Slow your roll, dude. Like
first of all, you're very emotional right now, and you need to step back from your mobile phone or tablet or South Dakota State. What they did last night was what I expected most teams in the non-conference to do. They doubled or bracketed Tyler Johnson all night. Now, did Tyler Johnson have a couple of passes glance off his hand? Yes. Yeah. Is that concerning? Yes. Is Tyler Johnson still good? Yes. I mean, when you saw him catch the ball, he was making men miss, getting vertical, and getting first downs. Now, what Rashad Bateman benefited from last night was on the long touchdown, I thought it was super interesting, and I didn't really understand it, that on that play, South Dakota State went man-free, which meant it was man-on-man on the outside with just one safety over the top. And if you're going to do that, especially if you're an FCS team against a Big Ten team, you have to get home with your pressure. They didn't get home with their pressure. Rashad Bateman beats the FCS corner on the outside. Tanner Morgan put a good ball there, and it was just a sensational catch, obviously, by Rashad Bateman. I got the video up on my Twitter machine if you want to go check it out. It was obviously a great catch. But just an interesting call that I didn't really think that SDSU had to get into. But that's why Bateman had such a huge night, is if you're going to double team or bracket Tyler Johnson all night like South Dakota State did, that's going to allow your other playmakers to make plays. And Rashad Bateman is a playmaker that makes plays, and that's why you saw him have that really nice stat line that he did. Now, I'm at the wide receiver position as a whole. Chris Ottman-Bell went down early in the game with an ankle sprain. He was in the injury tent, which is why you didn't see much of him. My impressions from Seth Green last night were, I was, number one, a little surprised that Minnesota didn't go to much Wildcat.
I was too.
Especially because they were struggling to get push up front. And so why not put back your 6'5", 250-pound ball carrier instead of your 5'10", 220-pound ball carrier. You saw Minnesota had success with that on one of their early touchdowns, and I'm not sure why they didn't go back to it more. I'm a little surprised by that. But Seth Green as wide receiver was very meh. There were a couple of bubble screens last night,
right,
that didn't find success. One of them was because Seth Green just flat out missed his block. And so I had a lot of people talking in my mentions last night or on Gopher Illustrated, you know, why are we going to the bubble and tunnel screens? They suck, yada, yada, yada. I mean, you saw why Minnesota would go to them. And yeah, what I mean by that is get the ball to Tyler Johnson or Rashad Bateman. They are going to make the first man miss, but they can't make the first man miss if the guy isn't immediately on top of them when they make the catch. So say Seth Green makes that block. Well, then it's one-on-one for Rashad Bateman versus a safety. And if he misses, it could be a house call. And that's why you're going to see Minnesota go back to them. But it was also evident when Minnesota went to the tunnel screens that South Dakota State's defense was prepared for that. Their defensive linemen were able to recognize that, and that's why Minnesota wasn't able to get a lot done there as well. I don't think either of them are going away. I just think that Minnesota didn't execute well on those, and that was some of that's because of their wide receiver play outside there. And so Seth Green is, I think, going to have more opportunities out there, especially if Chris Ottman-Bell's ankle injury is going to keep him out of some of the Fresno State or the Georgia Southern games. But again, I think that you saw last night that if a team takes Tyler Johnson away, Rashad Bateman is going to make them pay. And I'm going to be very curious to see what Fresno State does next week, because Minnesota has the playmakers on the outside. And we're going to see if they decide that they're going to try to do the same thing to Tyler Johnson. If they do, you're going to see another big week from Rashad Bateman.
Yeah, and you know, Ryan, really what needs to happen is Tyler Johnson needed that compliment in Rashad Bateman, basically to give an opening for Johnson in general. Otherwise, you know, teams are just going to be able to take that away. Just think of the years of like Eric Decker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So
the many years of having one competent pass option, right. Now that Minnesota has two.
Yeah,
that was one of the big reasons why they were able to win the game last night.
All right, but let's talk. I know you really want to talk about offensive line. Let's touch on the offensive line real quick here. This is a group that they struggled, whether it was stunts, stems, whatever. They definitely struggled in that area.
Oh, I think that's a very kind way to put it. Is Minnesota's offensive line and even tight end group had looked like they'd never seen a stunt before. You know, whether it was the one technique coming out all the way around to the other side of the formation. And it's just, it comes down to one thing with stunts and stems and twists and everything is communication. And I think there was a lot of assuming going on up front. And I learned a long time ago, Luke, that if you assume, you make an ass out of you and you make an ass out of me. It's literally in the name. And so I just don't think that Minnesota communicated well up front. And that's played a large part in, I think, a lot of the issues that Minnesota was having in pass protection, especially. I mean, I can single out a couple of guys if folks are like, I didn't think Curtis Dunlap had a particularly good night. And that's going to happen when you are in your second career start as a redshirt freshman. He started in the bowl game, but this was his first time in extended game action in his collegiate life because he rotated in the bowl game. He started, but he didn't play all the snaps. Well, he played all the snaps last night, and he looked very green. I still think that the athletic ability is there. I think that the ceiling is still there. As when it all clicked for him, it was a good rep. I mean, obviously, that's why he's out there. But when he went against the three technique that, you know, had some kind of ability to him, he was struggling at times with his punch and being able to disengage mm-hmm. him off the line. Mm-hmm. The strength is there. The talent is there. It just needs to come together there. But I think that would – the overall point with this O-line tight end group is just they really struggled with these stunts, and they just didn't communicate well because I can't even really give you an actual reason that I would believe that why they couldn't communicate across the line that, hey, my guy's leaving. That's why you got to keep your head up as an offensive lineman to see if my guy goes away, that probably means another guy's coming towards me. And by the time that either the tackle or the tight end would realize that, they were a step late and a dollar short and ended up being pressures on Tanner Morgan. Or it ended up being in the run game, Minnesota wasn't able to get a lot of push. And I think that was true across the offensive line as a whole last night, is the lack of push up front is concerning. And that's why when I talk about all these fall camp reports on Gopher Illustrated, I really only saw 5 minutes of O-line, D-line. And that's where I tried to keep as a reserve of an opinion as I could there is, how am I supposed to evaluate something that I can't even watch? And so this was the first real time that these guys have gone, or I've seen them go against somebody, and both the O-line and the D-line disappointed. And so how do they, in the words of PJ Fleck once again, change their best going into Fresno State?
And actually, I want to say something too. Like, this is early games, right? So you gotta take it with a grain of salt a little bit.
Early games with not a ton of scouting of what they were going to do. And credit again to South Dakota State.
Yep.
They went against an offensive line in game one that was having a lot of issues, and they continued to stunt. They continued to stem. They continued to twist. And Minnesota's offensive line didn't communicate better as the game went on.
But, as you would be a betting man, right? I know you are. I would hesitate to bet against Brian Callahan, given the precedent that he has as an offensive line coach.
And that's where you saw as the line got better last year, Minnesota just got further into the season, and then it ended with them dismantling Wisconsin's front seven and then Georgia Tech's front seven. And then it comes down to, once again, how much of that is because Minnesota had an adequate scout on them.
Correct.
They had plenty of game tapes that are able to really know what they're going to see. They had plenty of game tapes to prepare for what the kind of looks that they thought they were going to see. And in game one, they didn't know that what they were particularly going to see.
And excuses next week, because there's tape.
And there is. And so that's where it comes down to. I mean, did Minnesota just not adjust as the game went on once again? And if that remains the case, I mean, that's very concerning that the coaching staff couldn't make the necessary adjustments to put their offensive line and tight end group in the position to succeed. But that's where, again, we'll see how it changes next week. I didn't think that really any of the guys on the offensive line, that each one of them had moments where it was a little suspect at times. From what I've seen on tape so far, I would say that Connor Olson at the center position had the most consistent night. But that being said, Sam Schluter got beat at times. Daniel Faalele's punch was, I think, lacking in physicality. Curtis Dunlap had his issues in pass protection. Blaze Andrews had an up and down night. I didn't really understand the illegal downfield blocking call where all either. He did was put his shoulder into a man's chest. But
that's where it's,
here we are.
For me, that's a question of, do I not understand a rule change that's possible? Because they were pretty certain about it. I don't know. That didn't make sense to me. But that to me was the real one super suspect question. I guess you could maybe talk about the hold on the kick return, but whatever.
And that's where I wish we had Derek here today. But Derek's off doing his actual real-life job thing, and he'll join us in the Big Ten Conference. And that's where one of the questions I would have had for him is, I mean, don't pretend to be the offensive line mind that he is, but just the lack of communication up front between these stunts just was concerning. And if I was Fresno State, I would absolutely go back to that next week. But I can assure you, I can guarantee that that's one of the big things that this Gopher team and this Gopher offensive line are going to be working on this week, is I would imagine Brian Callahan is just going to stunt and twist them into the grave,
right,
to get them prepared for what I would imagine Fresno State would be foolish not to at least try early in the game.
Yeah, and from the run game specifically, the Gophers only ended up with 134 yards with a 3.1 yard per average, 42 carries in total. The offensive line, I don't know if it's fair to give them this stat, but, gave up 5 tackles for loss and 2 sacks. Sacks could be on Morgan a little bit too. But
yeah, I think sacks is more of a quarterback thing than an offensive line thing.
Right.
I mean, both are responsible for it, but in that same respect, I mean, Rodney Smith and Mo Ibrahim didn't really have a lot of places to go all night. A long rush of 15 against South Dakota State, who was a middling team against the run. Now, they did, as we talked about in the preview show, return essentially all of their entire front seven. You saw that their linebacker, Christian Roseboom, the guy who tried to look like Clay Matthews out there, he's a good player.
Oh,
and
yeah,
some of their defensive linemen were making some pretty good plays, but in that same respect, you got to be able to consistently open holes against a team like this, or at least 4 or 5 a game for these talented running backs.
Yep.
So Roddy Smith gets 20 carries and he's only able to get 92 yards. I don't think that's necessarily a reflection of him. I think it's a reflection of the lack of space that Minnesota created for him, and that's got to change next week.
And pardon me, let's also talk about, like, on that very last drive for that last touchdown, they were pushing the pile, they were making running lanes, and Roddy Smith was executing. So when the opportunities are there, like, he's gonna, I still believe he's gonna capitalize.
Yeah, you mentioned the final drive, Roddy Smith 15-5-9.
Yeah.
And then Minnesota was able to get it into the end zone, and so when he did find space on that final drive, he's able to turn three carries into 30 yards, and I think all of us would take 10 yards a carry. And so all it took was, you know, Minnesota to finally get some momentum. They were able to get some adequate blocking up front. And I just think that, I think it's also worth mentioning that, where was Brevin Span Ford last night?
Yeah, he didn't.
I didn't see him in there.
I don't recall either.
That surprises the hell out of me. I didn't think that Bryce Witham was going to be getting run before Brevin Span Ford. There's too much talent there for that not to happen. And maybe it was just the game script, the game situation, for whatever they saw on film. They didn't think that they could utilize his skill set in the passing game. I don't know what it is, but, you know, Cole Keefe got a ton of run last night. Jake Paulson got a ton of run, so did Bryce Witham. I expect Brevin Span Ford to see more run in the coming weeks. But again, I just think that Paulson and Keefe specifically, just this offensive line group with their tight ends, need to get on the same page about communication and being able to pass off a guy to another guy so that they can adequately get things blocked up front. But like I said, between Patterson and Callahan this week, they're going to work on that a ton.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I do recall an instance where Jake Paulson got lined up one-on-one with a defensive end. That didn't end well.
And it didn't go well.
And it did not go well. And I don't put that on him per se, right? I just think that, to your point, it's just a microcosm of the lack of communication that was happening, right? But in the same respect, there were a couple devastating blocks by Kokeef, like, and he just got into a guy, right? So it was just an up and down and inconsistency across that whole unit.
And that's where, if this is going to be the theme this year, where inconsistency continues to rear its ugly head,
right,
the season isn't going to be the season that we thought. Yep. And that's where they're going to have to start to become more consistent, and that starts next week.
All right, let's talk a little bit of quarterback just to round this out. I don't know that we really need to talk running back much, just because it was a microcosm
I think we adequately handled that. Let's get to quarterback.
So Tanner Morgan, I think up and down evening for him. Okay, let's talk the interception real quick. I watched that back a few times. I'm curious, have you seen it yet? Have you rewatched it yet?
Let's hear your take and I'll give you my impression.
Okay. I think he made the right pre-snap read. I think that what happens is that the safety that makes the interception blitzes down, plays the run, bails last second, sits, squats. Tanner doesn't read that and then makes the throw to Bateman, who's kind of covered. It's probably a throw you should make, but obviously didn't read that. And I think that in a way the guy made a great play, but he also kind of got lucky.
Yeah. From what I saw on film, pre-snap Morgan thought he had man-to-man, which is why he immediately went to the slant off play action. Well, the issue was the safety is a guy by the name of Josh Manchegaya. He bit on play action, and then he dropped back, and Morgan never saw him, and he threw it right to him.
He just he bit right into the right spot. I just think it was kind of a gift. He recovered well. Yeah,
but Morgan's got to see him
right,
and that's one of the things we talked about when Zach Anixon went down. I did a huge piece on Gopher Illustrated about what were the warts of Tanner Morgan last year. What did he do well? What didn't he do well? And that's where he had the issue where he would stare down a guy and he would never see the defender sitting there. And you look at those interceptions, his four that he had last year, that was his big issue.
And he was guilty of that last night multiple times, even for completions.
There were two throws of the 18 that I was just not a big fan of. One was the interception. And there was another one where it was a hitch and go to Rashad Bateman on the outside.
Yeah, that was a bad throw.
It was double covered, if not triple covered.
And he was actually fortunate that the safety turned his hips and turned the other way, because the safety could have made the interception.
Well, Bateman almost somehow made the catch. But in that same respect, Tanner, you can't immediately just chuck it into double coverage and just know. I mean, that corner didn't really bite. The safety was sitting there over the top, and he threw it anyway. I mean, just those two throws specifically bugged me. But I think the overall bigger picture with Tanner last night was that it was pretty consistent after that.
Now, yeah.
2 of 18. I mean, what would that be? 11% of your throws were a little bit suspect.
Yeah.
You know, take that. And that's where PJ Fleck talked about after the game. He thought that Tanner played well and that their offense is going to be able to do some more things because of what Tanner showed last night. Now, again, he made a great throw to Bateman on the outside who made an even better catch. He made a couple of tight throws or eluded pressure at times to extend drives. And, I mean, here we are, Luke, and we haven't even mentioned that Tanner Morgan, a guy who significantly struggled in read option last year, kept the ball a couple times last night for big chunk plays.
Yeah, he had the 14-yarder, and that was a huge, huge,
huge play. He had a 14-yarder, he had an 8-yarder.
Yeah.
I mean, just doing that 2-3 times a game, once Minnesota can, you know, adequately, in theory, set up their offense with adequate game tape, is something that they're going to be able to exploit, I think. And that's where... Go ahead.
Oh, I heard some people concerned, like, why are we running our quarterback? We only have Tanner Morgan. I mean, guys, to keep people honest, you have to keep it. I would be remiss if you remember the Connor Rota days where nobody kept it, right?
Good times.
Yeah. But, I mean, he made the right reads a couple times. One time he didn't. He ran right into a run blitz, right?
Right.
But that happens. Like, you have to keep the defense honest, and he did a good job of that.
Yeah, and I'm just happy that he had the confidence to keep a couple of times, and he found success with that. And because he found the success with that, he's going to do it again. Now, there were some good, there was some bad. I think there was more good than bad with Tanner last night. I don't think he was one of the primary reasons why Minnesota's offense couldn't get going. I would put that more on the guys up front and what was going on up there. You know, what did you think of the way Kirk Ciarrocca kind of operated last night?
I wasn't really... A lot of inside zone.
Anytime you have an 18 play 91 yards for 10-minute drive, you're going to see a lot of inside zone there.
Did you feel like offensively they're playing not to make mistakes and not to lose?
It felt like they were trying to do too much and trying to be too perfect, and
the
result of that was a lot of, you know, there. I think there was a lot of things that Kirk Ciarrocca saw last night that. He made a play call and it wasn't executed correctly, and it may reflect on him that, you know, it was super bland. What's Minnesota doing? And I do think he deserves some flack for some of it.
Yeah.
But I also think that maybe Minnesota's players and the situation called for a play and the players just didn't execute it. Ultimately, that comes down to him and his offensive staff not getting this team prepared for that. But I'm not necessarily, you know, against some of the play calls that he was going against, if that makes sense.
Two things. Number one, I appreciate that Fleck says you want to put players in a position to make plays, right? And I think that in some ways they were able to do that, maybe not as consistently as they would have liked to, maybe better on offense than they did on defense. But that said, I just felt like everything was just tense and tight. I remember messaging you at one point after the touchdown, maybe we can finally loosen up. I don't know if, in a point being, like, we're on the 36-yard line, fourth down, first drive of the game, and we like to punt.
Punting from your own 36 against an FCS team is just mind-boggling.
Here's my frustration with that. I felt like that was a microcosm of the fact that, you know, they're like, we're going to play this to a script. And, you know, the script says do X, right?
And I hate that script. It should be torn up, thrown into a fire, and blasted into the ether. As it was fourth and short, I believe, if I remember correctly, fourth and short from the South Dakota State 36. If you can't get a short yardage situation converted at home against an FCS team, like, what are we doing here?
Well, I wondered too. It either says that you're not confident in your offensive line, what you've seen at this point, right? Or conversely, it's saying, like, we're not comfortable in what we see with our defense. Like, that's what it, I'm not sure what it was saying, but it sent
it was,
either a poor
it was
message.
Certainly sending a, it was sending a message to something. I'm not entirely sure what that something was, but it was certainly something.
Okay. I do
special teams.
Yeah, we do.
Not great.
We got to say that. You know, kicking wise, I think you're actually. I'll say this. I think your special teams MVP was Grant Riersey. He had excellent kickoffs right to the goal line. The problem was the coverage was terrible.
Ooh, and I think that's being kind. You had a 99-yard touchdown called back, and I thought was a sketchy holding call.
I don't. I think it was textbook holding. I just don't think it made an impact on the play. I just don't think the official could see that.
Then you also had the 50-yarder in that fourth quarter to set them up on their final drive. Yeah, Rob Wenger's unit was not elite.
No.
Last night. I mean, and you even saw some of the jitters from welcome to life with Minnesota special teams this year, folks, where you have a true freshman long snapper in his first game. Michael Lance is a true freshman kicker in his first game, misses the extra point. I believe the snap on that one.
Yeah, I was going to say the snap wasn't great, kind of threw off the timing. Also, it's longer than a traditional extra point, but still one he's got to make.
It is, and it's one that Minnesota's going to have to count on here as they're going to be in some tight games coming up going forward on the schedule. But that's where I keep coming back to. Yeah, I mean, the snap hold kick wasn't great at times, but you also had two true freshmen 18-year-olds in their first collegiate game.
Yeah,
I'm imagining that they were a little bit jittery, a little bit panicky, trying to do everything a little bit too perfect, and they just weren't going out there and executing what they had done in practice each and every day.
Yeah.
So if this continues to be an issue going into late September, early October, and as we go forward from there, then I'm going to place more concern in it.
Yeah.
But I also recognize that we're talking about 18-year-olds in their first collegiate game with what I thought was a 85% full stadium, and that's the most amount of people they've ever played for in front in their entire lives. And so we'll see how they do next week as they go on the road for the first time.
Yeah,
but they absolutely have to get better there. And I think the bigger point being, I am very concerned about the kickoff coverage, because if South Dakota State's able to scheme that up on you, I mean, you're going to have some other teams really try to take advantage of that. And that's where Rob Wenger's got to get this coverage unit playing much, much better.
Okay, lastly, did Rodney Smith make a tackle? Or who was number one that made a tackle towards the end on kick coverage?
Could have been Calvin Swenson, who would be the other number one.
Okay, I didn't know who that was. Then number two, we should mention Herbers. Again, we know Herbers either is, you know, best in the country.
Herbers is 41 yards and a fair catch, which if you're cool with 41 yards net gain or net punt every time, then he's for you. You look at him on the night.
No touchbacks. But
yards a punt.
Yeah, two inside the 20, and the two inside the 20 were like not even close to the 10.
Here's what I'm gonna tell you: if 34 yard average on five punts and only two inside the 20, that's just I don't think that's gonna get it done.
No.
Now that being said, I don't believe that they returned a punt last night. It doesn't appear that they did. So if you're 34 net punt, that's not great. And Jake, I wasn't thrilled with particularly any part of special teams last night. I don't believe that Minnesota really even returned a kick last night. They did not. Demetrius Douglas only has one return for 8 yards. So the special teams unit, I mean, if you're going to win it in close games, it's clear that South Dakota State won the battle there, and Minnesota was still able to come out with a victory somehow. And I think that's the bigger point here as we wrap it up, Luke, is, I mean, you look at all the traditional stats with this game where South Dakota State – you know, had more yards per play. They had more big plays. And Fleck talks about the 78% so much. And if these three specific things that culminate in that 78%, if you win those on a given week, you're going to win the game more times than not. Well, I think this is one of those situations where Minnesota didn't win those scenarios, but they were able to somehow still find a way to win the game. And that's where it came down to turnovers. Mm-hmm. Tanner had that pick, but then other than that, it was the pick six that Gibbs gave to Williamson because of pressure and a grounder to his knees. And then it was with that exchanged handoff where Gibbs and the running back didn't really have a clear handle on who was going to take it, who didn't. Balls on the turf, Duvetti Boudaire pounces on it. And you look at six plays later, Minnesota takes the lead. So after all of the things that went poorly last night, and we've covered it plenty on this podcast, they still found a way to win the game. They're still 1-0.
Yep.
And that's where I continue to come back to that Northwestern example last year. Northwestern lost to an even worse team than South Dakota State at home, and they still rebounded in October, November in a very quick amount of time to change their best, and they won the Big Ten West. Now, I'm not saying that's what Minnesota's going to do, but we even mentioned last year they get absolutely shellacked by Illinois, and they come home the next week and absolutely pound Purdue.
Yeah,
it's game one of the year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guys getting their jitters out. Now, if this continues to be concerning against Fresno and Georgia Southern, then yeah, we can change our opinions and different things like that. It's just they were outplayed last night by South Dakota State, and they still won the game. Now, that's not going to likely continue if you continue to be outplayed, if you're going to win the game or not, but there's going to be a much different team, in my estimation, that shows up against Fresno State than what you saw from your seat or your couch last night.
Let's just say this. Take a deep breath, everyone.
They still won. It wasn't pretty.
Still won, but winning bad is still winning, right?
And that again, would we have liked to have seen a 41-13 victory?
Sure. Yeah, sure.
But I'm not sure that it would entirely have changed my opinion of really much of anything, because it's one game.
Mm-hmm.
It's one win or one loss, and then you move on to the next week. So Minnesota is going to spend probably today going over all their mistakes. Then tomorrow they're going to watch what Fresno State does, make sure that they're extremely adequately prepared as best they can be for a Fresno State team with a new quarterback, a much different team than what they saw last year. And then they're going to build their scout from there. And your hope is that the offensive line can figure out what a twist and a stunt is and how they can adequately prepare for that. And if they can, I think you're going to see a much different offense next week that hopefully has many more explosive plays. And defensively, I'm going to imagine that Joe Rossi is going to spend a lot of time with misdirection and motion, because that is something that Minnesota's linebackers and front seven really struggled with. So
yeah, Brock Huard,
we know what they need to work on, but if they don't improve upon it, then it's going to be something that obviously we're going to tackle on here. But I think we should give the staff a little bit of credit. I didn't think they particularly were good last night, the coaching staff, that is, and making adjustments. Or maybe it was the players which weren't making the plays, but they have to get this team playing a lot better next week.
Yeah, I liked that Brock Huard affectionately called it window dressing, all the motion. I thought that was a very nice description of what they were doing. All that said, I want to thank everybody for listening. Again, deep breath, everybody. It's one game. It's a lot easier to learn after a win than it is after a loss. So we want to thank you for listening. We appreciate our sponsor, the Goal Line Club. Again, Chillin' Five, if you want to join that tailgate and you're not a member. Okay, thanks for listening. Go Gophers.